Thanks for tuning in to the Falcon Theater Podcast. I'm your host, Dean Jansen, mild-mannered manager of the Falcon Theater in Tisdale, Saskatchewan. Together with my son, Noah Jansen, the self-professed movie snob, we're going to enlighten and entertain you with our immense movie knowledge. So sit back and relax. But if you're currently driving a vehicle, don't relax too much. But enjoy this episode of the Falcon Theater Podcast. Okay, so welcome everyone to the Falcon Theater Podcast, episode number 8. 7 more than we thought we would get.
I mean, I'll be honest, I think this is 8 more than I thought we would get.
You never thought we'd actually get together to do the first one.
Weirdly enough, I thought they'd actually take one away from us. Like, oh, this is 9 more than I thought. I don't even know how that works, but I don't know.
You have to record something and then instantly delete it because it was so bad.
We've never had to do that. One shot, no. One take. That's all we need.
Well, it does help that I host it myself, so there's nobody else taking it away from me.
That's true. That's true. Yet, until we get bought out by, like, Viacom or, like, you know, Disney, and then they...
Hey, you know. If Disney wants to come and buy out our podcast, I would be more than willing to sell it to... pretty much any bidder.
I mean, I for one fully accept our Disney overlords. So
they would have to pay more than the cost of the t-shirts that we got, though.
You know what? I feel like that's fair.
Okay. So here we go. Starting off, what's happening at the Falcon Theater this coming up here? Well, to start with, I want to talk about the facelift. The Falcon Theater, if you've been in Tisdale and you've gone past the Falcon Theater, you maybe looked and were like, what the heck? Are they tearing the theater down? No, just the opposite. We're actually making the theater better. The theater's almost 80 years old, and we figured it was time for a facelift. So all of the stucco has been removed off the three sides, and they're currently in the process of putting on insulation. And they're going to be putting tin on the three sides, and then they're going to start on the front, and they're going to redo the whole front of the theater as well. So it's going to be look like a brand new building from the outside.
But it's what's on the inside that counts.
Well, always, because I'm on the inside, and I'm what counts. So, yeah, that's true. So it's going to look great. It's going to beef everything up. They had a little more rot in the wood than what they...
It's also an 80-year-old building, so I feel like that's fair.
Yeah, it was really bad on the back where the chimney was.
That makes sense.
Yeah, a lot of water had obviously ran down the side of the chimney or something, and so they replaced all that wood. And also, there was a beehive living in the back of the theater in the walls, so they had to cut that out. They apparently filled up the hole last fall. And so during the winter, all the bees died, and then they took out like 3 ginormous bags of honeycomb out of the back wall of the theater.
Oh my goodness. So, I mean, hey, I guess that fits for Tisdale. I feel like there's going to be anything like, you know.
We are the land of honey and yes, something else.
And a word that we will not say, even though it doesn't mean that, but I don't think we can say that out in public.
Canola.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't exactly. Have the same ring, but I guess that, you know, that, and, you know, old farmers would argue with me that it's not canola. Canola is different. It is.
Actually. You're going to get protesters now out in front of the movie theater.
Both of our listeners will protest.
Yeah.
Actually, I was looking and we had, I don't know, 40 or 50 people that tuned into our podcast, our last podcast. Now, I don't know how many stuck with us till the end, but. I mean, they tuned in.
They listened for about 30 seconds.
Perhaps. I know of a couple people that listen quite religiously and actually ask me when we haven't done one in a while. When are you guys doing? So I know we do have a couple of listeners anyway.
It's seeming we're kind of on a monthly basis here now.
That's kind of getting to that point, isn't it?
Yeah, which I feel is good. It doesn't feel like if we do it, you know, almost too much, then, you know, there's not enough to talk about. It gives us a little bit of time to let news come out and let us kind of have more topics to discuss too.
Yeah. I want to
send a little shout out to Richard Cathcart, who's one of our, you know, always listeners. And he's one of the guys who's always, when is the next episode coming out? So I appreciate the encouragement from him. Also coming up at the Falcon Theater here in the next few weeks, this weekend, which is May 8th today when we're recording. So May 10th to the 12th, we've got the movie Challengers, which I think we talked about a bit in the last one.
Briefly. I've gotten a chance to not see the movie, but see the trailers, and I'll be honest. I'm kind of hoping that I get the chance to go see it soon. I've heard Zendaya is very, very like a bit of a standout in this movie.
Yeah, I agree. I've read reviewers that have given it really high praise, and I think it's, you know, it's a movie, it's kind of a love triangle thing where she kind of has the power, and it's supposed to be quite interesting the way they put it together. So
Yeah, no, that's definitely, like, I think if I the next movie I probably go see, that's gonna be the one. So
after that, we've got Cafe Daughter, which again we talked about in the last episode. After that is a kids movie, If, which I'm excited for. It's always, kids movies always seem to do well, so that should be a good one. The Fall Guys following that. And then the last confirmed movie we have is the Garfield movie coming up.
I was actually, one thing I was impressed by, I was looking at reviews for The Fall Guy, and it's been getting pretty decent reviews. I think it's holding like an 82% on Rotten Tomatoes so far.
Yeah, yeah, no,
which for a schlocky action comedy movie, like that's pretty good, especially for one based like after existing property too.
That's right. Yeah, I was reading that apparently one of the things, like, this movie is about, help me out here, son.
The stunt guys.
Yeah. And one of the things they're trying to sort of bring to the attention is the fact that stunt people don't get nominated for awards.
Mm-hmm. They gave there was a bit of at the last Oscars, they did not an award, but an acknowledgement for, you know, stunts and stuff like that. But that was about it. For that, I saw a really funny a promotional ad for the Fall Guy, and it was they had Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt, who were both famously last summer in the Barbenheimer movies, and the whole commercial thing is kind of poking fun at that, and it's them being like, we got to capture the whole Barbenheimer feel, so we're going to put you guys into different movie posters. So like, they're kind of making fun of like promoting of movies. They're like I don't know, they're like, this doesn't really sound like a good idea. It's like, listen, I'm a producer, I know what I'm doing, okay, let's just listen to me. it was a cute little commercial for it.
I love when they don't take themselves too seriously
too. Yeah, exactly. So
after that, some of the movies I'm trying to get, we've got coming up. Furiosa is coming up, and the new Bad Boys movie is coming up here.
Like Bad Boys, like Martin Lawrence, Will Smith Bad Boys?
Yeah, there's a new movie coming again.
Oh, okay.
A new one of those. The Planet of the Apes.
So. Yeah, I'm excited for that. I think that's kind of for the ones coming out this summer, that and Furiosa, the two of them. I'm pretty excited for that, and as well the Deadpool Wolverine movie coming out this summer as well. So,
oh, have you watched the Deadpool Wolverine trailer?
Yeah, so like when the first teaser came out, like obviously like I'm still excited for it and everything, and I was kind of like, oh man, I really hope they like I hope it's not too like on the nose with some of the jokes, and they like I hope they handle it pretty well. And then I saw like the most recent trailer, and I was like, okay, I have a lot of faith in it. Like it really got me. Any maybe slight hesitations I might have had, I mean, like, it kind of tempered that, and I'm very excited for the movie now. I'm really interested to see what they're going to do with it and everything. And apparently, I was reading that the like Wolverine in this one, it's like because it's they're going into the multiverse thing, and it sounds as though this is a different Wolverine than the one we've seen in like Logan and like the X-Men, like the main X-Men movies. Like this is a different reality Wolverine.
Yeah, and you know what, That's my biggest concern about it. Mm-hmm. I think it's the movie event of the summer for sure.
I think so too. Yeah.
But I'm sick of multiverse. I'm sick mm-hmm. of it.
Yeah.
Like you can basically rewrite any story and so all that's happened previously can become irrelevant because of multiverse. And I think Marvel needs to go a different direction.
Mm-hmm. Hey, listen to that, Disney.
I'm hoping y'all, they're going to buy us out. So yeah, they better be listening. I'm kind of hoping that somehow Deadpool, that this, because he's got the fourth wall breaking all the time, right? And I'm hoping that somehow he can stop the multiverse from occurring or something. And then it'll be like, okay, there's no more multiverse.
Have it turn into one of those, like the comic Deadpool kills the Marvel universe and he just goes around and just wipes everybody out.
Yeah, but he kills the multiverse is what he kills.
Yeah, it makes it so there's only one universe now.
Yeah, that's kind of where I would like to see it go, but I don't know.
I'm still it's going to probably be one of the highest grossing films of the year, I would say. Like definitely probably one of the most anticipated movies coming out this summer.
Yeah. It's got to be. Yeah. And unfortunately the way Disney does things because it is Disney, it comes out the end of July, but I probably won't get it until the end of August. Like, it'll be at least a month before I get it. So, yeah. Moving on. Did you hear that The Phantom Menace was the number two movie in North America last weekend?
that's just awesome. You know, I unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to go see it, but I know Kelton said he went and saw it, and he said Jar Jar still holds up.
Sith Lord Jar Jar, or
Sith Lord Jar Jar, which apparently, I can talk about a little bit more in the Star Wars portion. But Sith Jar Jar is going to be featured on screen this fall.
Oh, well, I look forward to
that.
Tell me about it later.
Yeah, I'll fill you all in about that. No, yeah, it's kind of cool, you know, seeing the reaction that The Phantom Menace is getting, you know, 25 years later and everything compared to, you know, 20 years ago, even when it came out for its, because this would be the third time now The Phantom Menace has been re-released in theaters. They released it in 3D right before Disney bought Lucasfilms. They had done it in like, so it was early 2010s. And even then the reaction was still like, oh, come on, Phantom Menace. Like, why are you guys re-releasing that one, you know? But I feel like the response has been a little bit more positive. The nostalgia is a little bit stronger, I feel, maybe.
Well, there's some things have changed in the Star Wars universe since then, too. I mean, everybody thought The Phantom Menace was so bad when it first came out. And after the new movies came out, people were like, okay, maybe it wasn't quite as bad as we originally thought mm-hmm. it was.
In my opinion, out of the prequel movies, Attack of the Clones is the weakest. That's my opinion.
Okay, yeah.
Why do you think that? I feel like the world building that was set for The Phantom Menace, like it's set just as A New Hope set the stage for the original trilogy, The Phantom Menace set the stage for, you know, the Galactic Republic and the Jedi and everything. And, I mean, yeah, sure, Jake Lloyd did the best that he could, and it was a little bit of a stilted performance. But I feel like in the second movie, the performances are a lot weaker. And I feel like they weren't as bold, maybe, with some of the choices. I mean, I still would go and watch, like, Attack of the Clones, but I feel like if I were to pick the prequel movies that I was going to watch, it would be number three, number one, and then number two.
That's an interesting look at things.
And I mean, at the same time, Darth Maul and Qui-Gon Jinn too. You can't really go wrong with those two.
Well, that is true. Yeah. So yeah, it was the 25th anniversary, I think is what it was. Do you remember when we went to it?
All I remember, and it, funny enough, is I think it is my first ever movie theater experience that I can remember. So I would have been probably 3 or 4 years old because it came out in 99, but who knows if you guys took me right when it came out, you know?
I'm pretty sure we did. Yeah. We went to
but all I remember is the pod race scene. That's the only part, like, if I think back that I can remember. And then, like, I mean, I remembered Attack of the Clones or Revenge of the Sith a lot better than going to that. But I mean, I was also older, so.
Right, right. All right, let's move on for now. We'll come back to some Star Wars later on. Did you hear that they're making a new 28 movie?
The 28 days later, hey?
Well, yeah, so there was 28 days later and then 28 weeks later. And then originally they were going to do 28 months later. But now I've heard that they're going to do, it's called 28 years later. And it's the original writer and director that did the first one.
I'm very excited. I love 28 Days Later. Like, that's probably one of my favorite zombie movies.
Except for, all of a sudden it's just gone from my head. You know, the zombie movie with the funny one with the British guy.
Shaun of the Dead.
Shaun of the Dead. Oh, thank you. There you go. Gosh,
there's a lot of zombie movies. I don't know what.
No. You know, that one's awesome. But anyway, I agree. 28 Days Later was an amazing movie. And Cillian Murphy was in it. He was the star of it.
Yeah, I think that was his breakout performance.
I don't think I realized when I watched, like, Oppenheimer and that I didn't think about the fact that he was the one in 28 Days
Later. Mm-hmm. I remember reading that it was actually a bit hard to film the movie because, like, when he's walking around London, they had to, like, shut down streets in the middle of the day, and, like, they had about 20 minutes where they could film one scene before they had to, like, reopen traffic and everything.
Oh, I suppose. You wouldn't want to shut down things too long in London.
Yeah, exactly, So, no, I'm excited for that, especially with the original, like, creators coming back to do it. I mean, Alex Garland coming back to write it and everything. I mean,
if you were paying attention, he's the one who did Civil War that we're going to talk
about a little bit later. Yeah, and like he's just such a I don't think he directed 28 Days Later, but he's such a talented storyteller. Like
he wrote it. It was a guy, Dan Boyle was the director.
Oh, Danny Boyle. Okay, yeah. I think Danny Boyle, he also did, what's the movie? Like Trainspotting, Slumdog Millionaire.
That's correct. Yep.
Yeah. He's a great director.
Your mother and I were having a little conversation the other day, and Goodfellas happened to be on TV. And when Goodfellas is on TV, you can't turn off Goodfellas.
You just put it
on and watch it. So we got into a discussion about what we liked better, Goodfellas or Godfather. Now, I know they're two very different movies, but they have the same tone.
You could kind of consider them, like, when it comes to the movies about the mafia, like, those are, like, the pinnacle of, the top tier of the mob movies out there, especially during that era.
You could probably put Scarface in there, too.
The only other ones, I would say you could probably, like, kind of argue, Scarface. And like Casino, I think it would be.
If anybody has any other suggestions, you could always, when I post this on Facebook, you could always comment underneath what you think could fit in with the mafia movies
Mafia High Council.
Yes. But Goodfellas and Godfather are like, to me, they're like the epitome of it. And your mother said she liked Goodfellas better, that she would rewatch Goodfellas. And I said I was more. I said if I was trapped on a deserted island and I could only bring one of the two with me, I would bring The Godfather. I could watch.
I'd probably bring like a boat, but a movie that's good too. But I personally, as much as I love The Godfather, I think I like when it comes to rewatchability, I think I would agree with Mother on The Goodfellas. As much as I love The Godfather, I feel like it's also one that's like, it's a bit of a slower burn. It's kind of the scenes, not that they take a long time, but they marinate almost kind of as the story builds off it and everything. And I feel like with The Goodfellas, it's something that's easier to just kind of put on and just kind of casually watch compared to The Godfather.
But you're stuck on a deserted island. You're not casually watching anything. It's the only thing you got to do is watch. So you're going to sit down and you're going to intensely watch it.
Okay, but here's the thing. You're only going to bring one movie. Okay, I watched The Godfather. Now I can't watch The Godfather 2, which is arguably just as good.
Yeah, but The Godfather is a great movie in and of itself. You don't need to watch the 2 to enjoy number 1.
Oh, true. I don't need to watch Empire Strikes Back after watching A New Hope, but I like to.
So you're siding with your mother?
I think I'm going to be siding with her. Yeah,
I suppose you love her better, too.
I know. You said it. I'm also a bit of a sucker for Joe Pesci too. Joe Pesci, like his performance. Have you ever seen his Oscar acceptance speech for winning for that movie?
I don't remember seeing it.
It is one of the funniest things, because it's like it's for Best Supporting Actor. So he comes up on stage and you're expecting, you know, like a big speech. He takes his award. He goes, "Thank you," and he walks off the stage. That's all he says.
Seriously? Yeah. Oh, that's such a Joe Pesci thing to do, too.
It's so funny. Like, Joe Pesci, like me and my friends, like, I continuously quote, like, the, like, what am I, funny, like a clown? Like, that whole scene.
That's one of the greatest scenes.
That scene was completely, like, improv'd.
You know what's funny is,
they weren't expecting him to do that.
Every time I watch that scene, it makes me think of my cousin Travis.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, cuz he would be exactly like that back in the day. He would just do it to just screw with you.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's such a good movie. Apparently after the movie came out though, and it became big cuz like Ray Liotta's character, like it's all based on true events and everything, and the real guy got in a bunch of shit cuz he started going around doing interviews while he was in witness protection. Because of the fame from the movie and everything.
And you know what? Maybe for me, part of it is the fact that I've read the Godfather books. So yeah, I know the lore, the background and the lore. I've even read The Sicilian, which is about like kind of a side story when Michael was over in Sicily. And so, you know, as much as I do love Goodfellas, I absolutely love that movie. I guess I know some of the more background around The Godfather, so maybe that's part of it.
I would say objectively, The Godfather is the better made movie. I mean, that's why it's usually like if you look at a list of the greatest movies of all time, number like Godfather and Godfather 2 are usually up there for number 1 to 3 for the greatest movies ever made.
Yeah.
You know. Like Marlon Brando's performance in it is just something like just out of this world. Like he's just so fantastic, which apparently he was quite a bit to deal with because he refused to memorize his lines.
I know. I saw a picture where
the cue cards.
Yeah. They had to put the cue cards on the other actors because he wouldn't memorize his lines. Like who does that?
Marlon Brando, you know?
Yes. And he's fabulous. He's absolutely fabulous in it.
Make an offer you can't refuse.
That's right. Let's move on. There's a movie coming out. I actually first found out about this movie because I get movie posters sent to the theater. And when I'm going through the movie posters, I pulled out the poster. I didn't even know this was becoming a movie. But the movie's called The Watchers. And the reason I bring it up is because I actually just read this book not that long ago and was really found it to be a really cool, interesting book. And so this is being made by, I'm going to say this right, is Shauna Knight Shyamalan. It's M. Knight's daughter, right?
I think so. I would assume so. I don't think there's a lot of Night Shyamalans out there.
Yeah. So the book is by A.M. Schein. And this movie is about a girl named Mina. It's starring Dakota Fanning. And she is driving on a road in Western Ireland around Connemara, where we were when we went to Ireland. We were by there. And her car stops working. And so she walks off into the bush and ends up at this little house where every night there's people in this house, and they're trapped in this house because every night there's these mysterious creatures who come out to watch them, and if they can't see them, they freak out and they're going to kill them. That's kind of it's an Irish folklore.
The trailer for it looked quite interesting.
Yeah,
it definitely had a bit of, like, you can see a bit of her father's influence. Like, it definitely has that kind of M. Night Shyamalan kind of, even like a bit of like the music in the trailer. Like, it kind of almost gave me a little bit of like, what was the one movie? The Village, almost a bit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, no, I'm the one thing I really like. I mean, I know it's not obviously M. Night Shyamalan. I believe he's still probably going to be attached to the movie since it's his daughter's movie, but
he's producing it. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, he always just seems to, when he, any movie he makes, he is just, it's so out there. Like, it's not going to be the most formulaic. That's what I was looking for. You know, like, he, you know, sometimes there's a twist, sometimes there isn't, but it's never just like a generic movie. There's always, like, you can tell it's an M. Night Shyamalan movie, you know? And the one thing I've always really appreciated with whenever he does a movie is he's kind of a little bit of like that George Lucas thing where he had one movie that was really big and he made a crap load of money from it. And now he can just kind of fund his own movies and make whatever the hell he wants or help his daughter make whatever she wants. So.
Yeah, and you and I both appreciate when movies are different. When they have something different about them and they're not just the same formula, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, that's what I found last weekend when I watched Civil War. It wasn't the regular Hollywood formula movie. And so I love that about it. But I got mixed reviews about the movie Civil War
from like the people
who came to it.
Interesting. Yeah, we'll have to. I have a lot of comments and opinions after viewing Civil War.
Well, go ahead. Give me some. Throw some at me.
So I my buddy came down to the city and we went and got to see it at the IMAX. And honestly, I walked out of that movie theater with such a surreal feeling. I know it has a lot of, there's been people with the mixed reviews about it. In my opinion, I think this is going to be one of the most important movies that'll be coming out in this decade, with the current political climate that kind of we seem to be in right now. The way that they tell the story through, you know, photojournalists as a bit of a neutral party. Like, the one kind of complaint I saw about it was they didn't explain, like, who's on whose side and who do we cheer for? And it's like, they literally explained it in the movie. They make a comment, the young photojournalist is like, well, you know, kind of like talking about what to take pictures of and, like, you know, this is like messed up. And the Kirsten Dunst character, you know, she says, our job isn't to tell people what to feel. Our job is to document what's happening. And then we let them decide how they want to feel about it, you know? And they, and that's the kind of the big complaint I saw. And they literally explained it in the movie. Like, I absolutely love that. Like, you don't really know, like, the backstory as to why it happened, but that's not important. It's not important to know why. It's because it is happening. This is what's going on right now, you know. And is the president, was he maybe a good president? Was he doing something in the right? And the Western forces that have, you know, splintered off and are attacking now, are they the bad guys, you could say, of the movie? Or was the president, did he become a fascist dictator and these guys separated to, you know, take down the dictatorship that now became the U.S. military? We don't know. But again, they're documenting, they're taking the pictures of what is going on, and it is up to us to determine whether or not, you know, it's who is good and who is bad. I love just like the little vignettes of, you know, these rebel groups and the army groups and everything. The scene with Jesse Plemons when they're dumping the bodies out there.
He's amazing.
That entire scene was just absolutely, it's just so terrifying, you know? And the really scary thing is, and you see it going on right now, like down in the United States, there's a bunch of these protests going on college campuses. And
not just in the U.S.
Well, yeah, but the police are literally coming through and in an authoritative way, like beating the shit out of journalists and peaceful protesters. You know, like the opening scene in Civil War when there's like kind of this, like, you know, the rally kind of going on, and then the person runs up with the American flag and they blow themselves up. Like, as soon as that happened, I was like, oh, we're in for something really different here, you know.
Before I saw the movie, and I heard that they were putting Texas and California together, and I was like, okay, that's just dumb. Like, Texas and California wouldn't go together. But after watching the movie and realizing that they wanted to keep it non-politicized, and
yeah,
and so by putting Texas and California together, you can't tell if you're cheering for Republicans or Democrats or who
exactly
you're cheering for, right? And I think that was genius.
Oh,
to put 100%. Those two together, to keep the politics and the left and right out of the discussion,
yeah,
and just like, to what, show, what did hey, this, here's what's going on.
What did that president do to make what you could say the most left state and the most right state band together against him? Like, what did that president, what was he doing in that sense to make them ally with each other, you know?
Exactly, yeah.
And I
know there's lots of people that wanted the movie to tell us what he did, to tell us so that we could cheer for the Western forces.
But you know what? The kind of the shitty thing about it is in the real world, in a real war, or in this case, civil war, like it's not a sports team. You know, there's no winners. At the end of the day, everybody loses. You know, everyone's going to be hurt by it. It doesn't matter what team you're on and everything like that. It's makes you really kind of sit back and actually have to analyze it and think. And, you know, I think a lot of Americans didn't really like the movie because I think they took offense that it kind of is a little bit calling out the state of affairs in their country and everything like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. And it really brings to the forefront that whole idea of war never changes, right?
Yeah, 100%. You know, like you see what's going on.
There you go, guys. There's your first drink of the day.
Oh, did I say 100%?
Yeah.
We made it pretty far this time without me saying it.
That's right. Back to the whole war never changes thing. You finished watching Fallout, right?
I did finish watching Fallout, yes.
And they say that a couple times there in the last episode,
yeah,
of Fallout. They make that point.
That's the catchphrase of Fallout.
But it works for everything, 100%, right?
100%. It's so true. You know, war never changes. You know, it also kind of makes me think back too on there's that one scene in MASH when they talk about make a comment about how war is hell, and then, you know, they're talking to the pastor and they say, well, who goes to hell? And they say, well, you know, yeah, dad doesn't go to hell.
He doesn't, it's Hawkeye. He says,
yeah,
war isn't hell. Hell is hell and war is worse.
Yeah. Good people, civilians and innocents, they get killed more of the time. They don't go to hell. You know, like it's a completely different thing, which is true. You know what I mean? The one thing I had read about Civil War, all of watching it, it felt real. Like the guns and everything. So apparently normally in a movie, when they're using blanks in their rifles and guns, it's called a quarter blank. So it's about a quarter as loud or as powerful as a regular. They use full on blanks. So the guns that they were shooting sounded exactly how those guns would have been going off and everything.
Oh, really?
This is one little thing that when I was watching it, I kind of, from my background for what I do for work, I kind of geeked out about. So the very first kind of little firefight that we see when there's this guy's on the ledge and they're shooting down at the guy hiding behind the pillar.
Yeah.
And he gets kind of away and he gets shot and they pull him back and everything. So he's on the ground. So this is just a little thing I noticed. When the guy pulls out the bandage, now typically when you see in an action movie, and someone gets shot or something like that, they take the bandage and they just like press it on top of the wound. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The one thing I really like, the attention to detail. So he gets shot kind of in like, I think the right side of his abdomen, and he's bleeding out. They take a cling bandage and they do a thing called packing, where you, with one hand, you press into the wound and then you fold it out and you almost are like folding it in to the wound and packing it in. And I'm watching it and he's doing an actual like medical move that would be used to stop like a dangerous bleed in a gunshot wound.
Oh, that's cool.
I was like watching, I'm like, that is like such a, because he easily could have just, you know, held on to it, you know, but yeah. And like, and even just like the small
scenes. I remember the scene you're talking about and thinking, well, that looks real. And that's what I found throughout the show, was that as I was watching it, I'm like, this seems real. Even the attack at the end, the way that the soldiers were moving and talking. I mean, I'm not a soldier. I've never been in that situation, but it sure seemed real to me.
Mm-hmm. And even at the end, when they finally get to the president and it's not some, you know, big speech of like, you can't kill me. It's like, please don't let them kill me. Boom. And they just shoot him, you know, like it's not this, it's just kind of like, okay, well, he's dead now, you know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It was, again, people hated that ending. I talked to a few people that hated it. I loved it. I thought that's the perfect way to end this movie.
The guy obviously was a, you know, he thought he was invincible. He was a cowardly, he probably lived as a coward and he died as a coward. And it goes to show at, you know, the beginning of the movie when he's giving that speech and he's rehearsing it and he's sounding like they're winning. He sounds like he's wanting them to, we're so close, they need to surrender. And then you look at the end and everything is in shambles for him. His beard is all unkept and he looks just like disheveled and everything, you know. It was, oh yeah, it's one that I really want to go back and watch again, because it was, there's so much so many scenes to take in the movie. Even the scene when they're going through like that little winter wonderland and there's like the sniper shooting at them. They never show you who the sniper is. You have no clue who it is. You don't know if it was like, was the person just protecting their family? Were they a rebel? Who were they? It doesn't matter.
They even ask the soldiers, who is it? And he's like, doesn't matter. He's shooting at us.
Yeah. Like, you know, like, and I think the one thing that it's almost a little bit, the scariest thing that people don't realize is it's not, we live a very, like when they go to that town, that's just very active. It's like life is normal there, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
It kind of, I think, is a bit of a good reflection on, like, you know, you look at what's going on in the Ukraine, you look what's going on in the Middle East, and then you look at how we live our life now. Like, it doesn't really, like, oh, that sucks that that's going on, but it doesn't affect us. We're fine. But how easily overnight could all of that happen to us? You know, do you think people in the Ukraine thought that Russia was going to move in and completely upend all of their lives and start bombing them? Probably not. You know, like there was tensions, obviously, but to the level of the invasion that they expected, like nowhere in the world is truly safe. You know what I mean?
You get the wrong president and they decide they want our water because we've got the largest supplies of water in the world.
Or our oil.
Well, I think our water is more important than our oil, to be honest.
Modern day.
They don't have water. We have water. But I mean, you get the wrong person in charge and they decide they want to come in and take our water. It's going to completely change our world.
Well, we would find out very shortly why the U.S. has one of the worst education systems, because we'll find out where they spend their money on.
Oh, don't get me started about education systems. I just won't even get started, because. Anyway, let's move on. We've talked about Civil War for a long time. So you told me you watched Fallout. What did you think?
This is coming from me, who is a huge Fallout fan. I'm currently, I watched the show and I had to go back, and I'm currently playing through Fallout 3 right now, because I had an itch to play the game. I really enjoyed it. There were a few minor gripes I had. Like Fallout has always been a little bit, like, there's a little bit of comedy, it's a little bit goofier, but end of the day, you know, it's mostly serious. I did think a little bit of the humor was a little too goofy. Like there's the opening scene where, you know, I guess spoilers are if you want to watch Fallout, but this is literally the first episode where, you know, there's a group of raiders attacking and they come out with a cake and he's like, no. And it was like, okay, I was a little, and they like shoot them with the cake. And I was like, that was a little goofy, but those few times when it's a little sillier didn't detract from the overall, you know, story of it. I thought the production of the show, like, it felt like, it truly felt like we were in the Fallout universe. Like the little things, even just the sounds that like the Pip-Boy makes and the food that they eat and just the way they interact with the world around them, it truly did feel like it was lived in the Fallout world. Definitely at the end, some of the nods of what they're going to be doing in season two left me very, very excited. Jody, who, I mean, she's never, like, she has knows Fallout from, you know, Eric and I talked about it, but she's never played any of the game. Like, I kind of explained a little bit of the lore behind the show as we're watching it, but even she loved the show, you know, as someone who has never played the games, you know what I mean? So overall, yeah, I thought for a video game to screen adaptation, it was quite good.
I've tried to play the games and actually have never been able to get into them, although I'm going to try again now. I'm going to try New Vegas. But your mother, too, has never played. And both of us absolutely loved it. Your mom was, like, right into the show. Now, mm-hmm. again, we did ask Eric questions as we were watching it because there were things that we didn't totally understand. But, you know, as they came up, I thought, to me, that you were talking about the goofiness, the best, goofiest part of the movie was Bud.
I did really like, and something like, that is totally the goofiness of Fallout. Like there's the one part in the one Fallout game where you're in this like building and all of the electronics are like sentient AIs, but they all have different personalities. So the toaster is like an evil toaster that wants you to put your hand in the toaster so you kill yourself because he's an evil toaster. So there is silly stuff in it. And I thought like that was in the, with the Vault Tech stuff, that was quite well done. If you are listening to this, you still want to watch the show, I won't go into it, but kind of the bit of the reveal at the end of the season, I didn't really see that coming to that extent. And I really did enjoy that. And then what's his name, Walton Goggins, the ghoul, yeah, favorite part of it.
Yeah, absolutely, he was amazing. The character, the acting, the writing, all of it was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And the reveal at the end was good. Like it was just so well put together.
Yeah, no, I was just saying, definitely left me excited for season two.
Yeah, for sure. I'm pumped. Speaking of shows watching, I just finished this week. I finally got a chance to finish watching Bad Batch. What did you think at the end of that?
You know what? I thought it was a solid finale. Like, it was nothing groundbreaking. Like, you know, season two of the season two finale of The Mandalorian when Luke Skywalker shows up. But I thought it tied up the story. It gave a satisfying finish, you know, and it was, I was still like, as the final episode was going on, like, I had no clue, like, are they going to go the Rogue One route and have them all sacrifice themselves so Omega lives? What's going to happen with that? And I liked that. I was nervous, but I was, you know, at the end, it all worked out, you know, like I first, for sure, I thought Wrecker was going to kick the bucket during it. Like he was hurt pretty bad during most of the final episode, you know?
I mean, if you haven't watched it, you might want to stop listening right now or fast forward a bit. But I actually think it would have been better if they would have killed off Wrecker. The fact that they didn't bring Tech back means that they're willing to kill him off. Yeah. So they should have, in my opinion, Wrecker should have probably died there saving Omega.
Mm-hmm. I was really nervous that they were like, I was like the whole time, as soon as Tech died, I'm like, they're going to bring Tech back. Tech's going to come back as one of those evil experimental clones. And I like that they didn't. I like that they just had him. He just died. He died for the mission, you know?
I agree. But they so they should have done the same thing with Wrecker and made it even more. And I get it, it's supposed to be for kids and they don't want to, you know. But yeah. In my opinion, too often we don't kill off people that, not that he deserved it, he didn't, but it just makes it feel more real when they
increases the stakes.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, 100%. 100% agree with that. I liked with Rampart, you know, he, the whole time, like he's kind of helping them against his will. And I like at the end that they didn't make him become a good guy. He's still an evil Imperial and he's going to screw over Nala Se at the end. And she gets the one up on him and takes herself down with him. Like, he doesn't get a redeeming arc. I like that he, at the end of the day, he's still evil. He was still a bad guy.
He was just there to save himself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, and I like the little piece at the end, like showing, you know, Omega now, like Hunter, he still wants to protect her. He still wants to keep her safe. And she's like, no, this is what I need to do. And I need to go with the rebellion and everything. So,
yeah, it was a nice tie-in at the end.
So yeah, no, it was, I thought it was nothing groundbreaking, but it was just a very solid end to a overall really good series.
Yeah. So this brings us to the point where everybody's waiting because they want to learn something new. So Noah, can you teach us something new? Tell us what you know.
I know something. So I got a little bit of a theme for this one, and you'll like it. It has to do with one of, if not your favorite movie of all time. So I was kind of reading some stuff about Pulp Fiction.
Mm-hmm.
So Samuel L. Jackson, when Tarantino was writing Pulp Fiction, he was the first choice to play Jules, and did an audition. Audition went great. They really liked him. And then an actor named Paul Calderon auditioned for Jules as well, and auditioned very, very well. And it kind of, like, at least with the producers, it kind of bumped Sam Jackson down one. And
I've never heard him called that before.
Who's that, Sam Jackson?
Yeah, he didn't audition as well. He doesn't get the full Samuel L. anywhere. Now he's just Sam Jackson.
My buddy Sam. So he kind of got bumped down, and he actually had to come back and re-audition for the role. And it was actually his reading of the final diner scene with Ringo. When he pulls him and he has like the wallet with bad motherfucker on it and everything, that whole scene, when he auditioned and did that scene, that was what solidified his role as Jules in the movie. And the actor, Paul Calderon, who kind of had almost got the role, ended up playing the bartender that works in Marcellus Wallace's bar. So that was supposed to be him. So another kind of interesting thing on top of that, so the famous burger scene of you know this is a tasty burger, him walking around like one of the most badass scenes, that was a scene that was written in after Samuel Jackson had come in for that that final kind of like audition thing. So he had come in and he was already kind of in a little bit of a pissed off mood because he had to come and re-audition for the role. And apparently somebody from production came up to him, and not in a joking way, in a serious way, said, "I love your work, Mr. Fishburne," thinking he was Lawrence Fishburne. And he got really pissed off about it. And so he came into the audition room with a burger in one hand and a drink in the other, with this intense look in his eyes. And it scared everybody in the room. And Tarantino was like, "I need to write this as a scene for the movie."
Oh, good for Tarantino to do that.
Also, did you know that that role is the only role Samuel Jackson has ever been nominated for an Oscar for?
No, I didn't know that.
And he lost to Martin Landau, who won for playing Bela Lugosi in the movie Ed Wood, which is a very, very good role. I feel like Pulp Fiction kind of got snubbed all around that year in the Oscars. Like, they lost to Forrest Gump.
Yeah, well, Forrest was a
pretty
amazing movie, too.
Shawshank Redemption also lost to Forrest
Gump. Oh, yeah. It was an incredible year for movies. As we talked in a previous podcast, I forget which one it was, but if you're curious about that sort of thing, that was a great year for movies, which we do talk about in a previous podcast. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so that's a little bit of Pulp Fiction.
Nice. I always love Pulp Fiction knowledge.
One thing, actually, a little thing I just remembered. Did you hear that Tarantino, you know, he had that new movie, The Movie Critic, that was supposed to be coming out?
I heard it was canceled.
It's no longer in production. So I'm curious as to what kind of.
We also talked about that one previously, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so.
I was kind of looking forward to that.
Me too. I'm looking forward to anything Tarantino. So
yeah. So we just had May the 4th pass us by, which is if you're paying attention, is Star Wars Day. So what do you got some Star Wars news for us?
Well, did you, with May the 4th coming out, did you get a chance to watch the Tales of the Empire short?
I saw that it came out, but I haven't watched it.
It was really good. So it's the same kind of idea as the Tales of the Jedi that came out for the previous May the 4th. That one talked about like Dooku and his fall to the dark side, and then Ahsoka kind of like showing her time like in the Jedi trials. So this one is about the Tales of the Empire. So the two stories that are told, I think they're in the end, it works out to be about an hour and a half between the six episodes. They're like 15 minutes kind of just shorts. So the first three stories cover Morgan Elsbeth, who is the Night Sister that we see in the Ahsoka live action show. That she's the one that like helps Thrawn. So it kind of covers her fall in how she kind of joins the Empire and everything like that. It starts with the fall of Dathomir and General Grievous is invading with the Separatists, and how they essentially kill all the Night Sisters, and how she reacts to that, and then how she meets Thrawn and everything. And then the other three are about Barriss Offee, who for the longest time since the Clone Wars, people always kind of speculated as to what happened to her. I don't know if you remember from the Clone Wars show, but she, like, there's the whole arc where the Jedi Temple is bombed, and Ahsoka is blamed for it, and it's actually the catalyst for Ahsoka leaving the Jedi Council for her being falsely accused of this terrorist attack. And Barriss Offee, who is Ahsoka's friend, is actually the one, because she became disillusioned with the Jedi, and so she commits the bombing. So it starts with her in her jail cell during Order 66, and the Grand Inquisitor comes in and welcomes her into the Inquisitorius, and it's like the beginning of the Inquisitors and everything, and showing them like at the beginning of their rise, and Barriss going through the Inquisitor trials. I personally like the Barriss Offee one more than the Morgan Elsbeth one, but they're both very, very good little, just very good little quick like hour and a half thing to put on and watch, you know. The one thing too, there was a new trailer also for the Acolyte, which comes out on June 4th here. We talked about that last episode.
Yeah, that's great.
Did you get a chance to see the new trailer for it?
I have not. No.
The one thing I really like is the opening line for the trailer is they go, "Peace is a lie," which is the first line for the Sith code.
Right. Yeah. Oh, and cool.
And they show what appears to be like we finally get a first shot of like the actual dark side Sith kind of. He almost looks like it looks like if Kylo Ren had like on his helmet a big smile like etched into the mask.
Oh, cool.
Check it out. Yeah, so no, I'm again very excited about that, as I've said on every
podcast. On every Star Wars thing, right?
Yes, but specifically that. There's quite a few. Oh, and I guess I was talking about Jar Jar Binks. There was also a trailer that came out this September. There is I don't know if it's a short series or if it's just like a quick like hour long kind of special. There's a Lego Star Wars feature that's coming, and it looks almost like it's like a What If series. And so it's like the Lego world of Star Wars, but all the Lego bricks are getting mixed up. And this one character, the hero of the story, is going around, and it's like the Battle of Hoth, but now instead of it being the Empire, it's the rebels with the AT-ATs attacking. And then there's Ewoks, but they're bounty hunters. And then there's this ship that lands, and Jar Jar Binks walks out, and it's Darth Jar Jar Binks, voiced by Ahmed Best.
Oh, and cool.
It looks, apparently Mark Hamill is reprising his role as Luke Skywalker, like Lego Luke Skywalker. And so I'm curious if they're doing like a evil Luke Skywalker. I don't know. It looks like a fun kind of little, kind of like that Lego Star Wars holiday special that came out a couple of years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. We'll have to talk more about that as it gets closer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so time for our miscellaneous question at the end of the show. Tonight's question is, name a TV show that you think had the perfect series finale.
I guess it kind of works that this episode was a little bit more of a TV-based episode with Fallout and Bad Batch and everything. But it's all entertainment and actors and everything. But for me, like, you could call it cliche because I feel like it's usually on the list of, you know, the greatest finales ever. But like, I still think that Breaking Bad is one of the greatest television endings of all time. Like, even, you know, with that being said, with like Better Call Saul and like the El Camino movie, like tying up Walter White's story. Like, I mean, there's a reason Breaking Bad's considered to be one of the greatest shows of all time. And I think a big part of it is it's not only stuck the landing of the finale, but it stuck the landing with a perfect 10, you know? What else can I really say about Breaking Bad? It's Breaking Bad. It's amazing.
Here's the thing, you know, I was a huge Breaking Bad fan. I love the show. I look kind of like Heisenberg, people have told me. I dressed up as him for Halloween. I can't remember the finale.
You don't remember?
Not really, no.
He goes to the compound with the Nazis, and he has the car that has the big machine gun in it, and he like presses the button, and it shoots all of the Nazis, and then Jesse gets away in the car, and he gets like a ricochet bullet and dies in the meth lab, you know, as Heisenberg, you know. Okay. Maybe the finale is so much better because the episode is leading up to it and everything with Ozymandias and like just the whole final season, maybe, you know. But yeah, I would like to give a dishonorable mention, if I could, for a show that
it's our show, you can do whatever you want.
I can do whatever you want. What I think is it's so funny, it makes me mad because I love the series. But my dishonorable mention is the fact that Dexter had not one but two disappointing series finales. I don't know how you manage that, but you like
they screwed it up twice. Yeah,
like I mean that is such a Dexter thing to do that, you know. I think that's very fitting for the finale that it would be very disappointing, you know? So that's my dishonorable mention for
good one.
A double whammy bad series finale.
And for me, I think my finale is even more cliche than your finale, because I think the greatest finale that's ever been made was the MASH series finale. And you knew it was going to end with the end of the Korean War.
Spoiler alert.
For a show that came out, what is that, 40 years ago? Anyway, but the way they handled that final episode was absolutely genius. And if you've watched it, then you know that the chicken scene is one of the hardest hitting scenes of all time in television. And if you haven't ever seen the MASH finale, then you need to see it for that scene, if nothing else, because it's the one of the best, absolutely most incredible, heart-wrenching shows that has ever been put on TV.
I think to this day, I think it's still the most watched series finale of all time.
Cool.
I don't think there was something it was 80 million people, like more than the Seinfeld finale, more than any of things like that. Like it was the most watched series finale. Me and my buddies, actually, like a couple of them, we make the reference about the whole final scene there every once in a while, you know.
Yeah. It's kind of funny, as people who know me know that I'm retiring here at the end of June, retiring from teaching, not from doing podcasts though. But anyway,
anything, there'll be more time for podcasts.
Exactly. My buddy Warren and I, that I work with, we have some personalized Better Together t-shirts. So on Thursdays, the first Thursday of the month, we wear a Better Together t-shirt. And we have ones that have the old guys from the Muppets. We have ones that have Fred and Barney from the Flintstones. And Warren just got us new shirts for the end of the year here. And it's actually Hawkeye and BJ from MASH.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and it says on it, it says Better Together, but it says, I'd like to stay, but that's going to keep me from going. And on the back is a picture of the goodbye from the MASH finale.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, I got a little choked up when I saw it. And so actually tomorrow we're going to wear our t-shirts for the first time. So,
oh, that's awesome.
New MASH t-shirts. So,
and
yeah.
And then you have to get an after MASH t-shirt, right?
No, I don't think I'll do that. So yeah. And I do want to give another honorable mention, and it's not a honorable mention for bad, but the Cheers finale was also very good. It just wasn't as hard hitting as the MASH finale.
Both those your two favorite
my two favorite sitcoms, absolutely.
Yes, yeah. Sitcom series of all time. But yeah,
yeah, 100%. Yeah, both ended well. Okay, well, that brings us to the end of another podcast, I guess, son.
I think so. See you guys. See you next month.
Well, we not see you. They'll hear us. We don't actually see the
people. Hear you. Tune in next month.
Tune in next. It could be a week. Could be a month. Could be 28 years.
How do you know later? I don't see them? Maybe I'm watching them right now as they listen.
We know that Google is. They were watching all of us.
They're watching and making sure that we're obeying. Obey, obey.
In the meantime, and in between time, we'll see you guys at the movies.